This is July 27th, 2014, and today I'm going to talk about karma, the law of causation. I had something else in mind until I was sitting this morning. before the formal sitting, I sit alone here usually, and all of the misery and horrors of the past week or two came to mind, and with it karma, the law of causation. And so I scuttled what I had planned on talking about, looked up some sources, and will now consider in particular the aspect of karma called the samskaras, and in particular consider it in terms of world events, recent world events. The word samskaras is the Sanskrit word for dispositions or tendencies. It's the fourth of the five skandhas. So the first challenge here is to not mix up skandhas with samskaras. In the Prajnaparamita that we just chanted, it begins, the Bodhisattva of compassion from the depths of Prajna wisdom saw the emptiness of all five skandhas. And the what we're calling samskaras, or, and it gets more complicated, there's the Pali version of it, is sankaras. But whether we say, I'll just stick with samskaras rather than complicating it further, but samskaras is the fourth of these five skandhas. To review what most people would probably need to review as far as the skandhas, these five skandhas, these are considered the five components of individual existence. So the first is form, bodily form, our bodies. The second is feeling or sensation. The third is perception. The fourth is the samskaras, or dispositions or tendencies. And the fifth is consciousness itself. So in our chanting of the Prajnaparamita, which for new people, the Prajnaparamita that was done this morning, this is the most widely, I think, as far as I know, the most widely chanted Buddhist text in the world. In I've heard that it's in every Buddhist country chants this Prajnaparamita because it is so fundamental to the Dharma, the teaching of the Dharma. And for the chanting version, we came up, or they, before I got here many years ago, they came up with simpler words so that these five rather cumbersome words, or not, they're not all cumbersome, but some of them are, could roll off the tongue more easily in our chanting. And so form is form. Feeling or sensation, we keep the word feeling. We found a way to reduce perception to the word thought. Samskaras, they use the word choice, and then consciousness, we had to stick with consciousness. So so form here is only emptiness, emptiness only form. So that's the first skandha. And then later we say feeling, thought, and choice, consciousness itself are the same as this. So feeling is only emptiness, emptiness is only feeling. Thought is only emptiness, emptiness is only thought. Choice is only emptiness, emptiness only choice. Consciousness is only emptiness, emptiness is only consciousness. This goes to the very essence of the Buddha's enlightenment and the teaching of the Dharma, teaching of Zen, which is that all things have this fundamentally empty nature to them. There is no substantiality to them, no fixed substance to them. So if that's true of each of these five components of each individual existence, which is each one of us, each individual, the I, what we call the I or the me, has these five components, all of which are empty, then there, this is how one way to understand the teaching of no self, which is one of the basic realizations that comes to us through awakening, is that there is no fixed self, no self-substance that exists from one moment to the next. But we are energy in a certain pattern, but energy means flux. We're not stuck with a self. And it's afflictions. It's to bring it back to samskaras, it's tendencies, it's habit forces. I think some of you will see where I'm going here in terms of recent events, with the two that spring to mind are the re-engagement of Israel and Palestine, the war, I suppose you could call it, kind of a war that's broken out again, and the shooting down of the Malaysian airline 10 days or 2 weeks ago over eastern Ukraine. And then throw in the ongoing horrors of the civil war in Syria and the marching through Iraq by ISIS, this savage terrorist organization, army that is wreaking havoc and doing mass executions in Iraq. And then there are plenty of others we can think of. So first, let's go to just briefly to this word samskaras. It's one of the 12 links in the 12-fold link, 12-fold chain of dependent co-arising. I don't want to get into this too much. We only have 40 minutes this morning, and this is a big, basic point of doctrine in Buddhism. Could spend a taisho on each of these 12 links, but basically, it's how it is that we perpetuate suffering. And it starts with ignorance. Ignorance of who we really are. This takes the form of believing that we are separate from others. This is the fundamental ignorance. Avijja is that there is a fundamental separation between self, what we think of as self, the I and the me, and what we think of as other than self, everyone else, everything else, self and other. This basic division is the root of suffering, this ignorance of the true nature of things. The true nature of things, which we can realize through practice, is that not one of us is apart from anyone else. To use a Zen term, there is just this one mind. Yes, in its appearances, there are infinite differences. Every single person is unique. Every phenomenon, every creature, every insect, every weather system. Everything is unique. But at the same time, this is the other side of the coin. At the same time, we are all are of this one mind, this one true nature, true self. So ignorance means ignorant of that fact, that truth, that we are all one, just to use simple terms. And out of this ignorance, that's the first of these 12 links, out of this ignorance comes formations, samskaras. That's what we're going to focus on today, is these tendencies. Another way to understand samskaras is that these are bodily and mental formations. So everything we, according to the law of karma, everything we think and say and do creates seeds of karma, seeds that can usually exist in latent form, that don't sprout into effects, but they're all seeds that are deposited in the mind, and then at some point in the future, maybe an hour later or a year later or six lifetimes later, these seeds with the right secondary causes and conditions, that is, with causes and conditions that contribute to it, these seeds sprout into actions or these formations. So these seeds then arising from the past perpetuate themselves as bodily and mental formations. And of course we all have these, everyone, I suppose, possibly with the exception of the Buddha, but I bet he had them too. And let me just say in parentheses that I find it more difficult the longer I practice to think that even the Buddha himself was absolutely free of all karma. Just start with the fact that he is reportedly died from eating poison mushrooms. That's karma. That's suffering. That's dying. But let's just say that certainly with the exception of the Buddha, that all of us are still working through these tendencies. And I the longer I practice, again, the longer I see that this is what it's all about. Whatever insights we may have, we are still our deeper tendencies that have acquired the most momentum through years or lifetimes of misusing the mind. These deeper, more deeply ingrained tendencies or samskaras continue. It doesn't mean that we are completely helpless in the face of these tendencies. Far from it. The longer we practice, the more aware we become of these tendencies. This is the key thing, is awareness. This changes everything. So that, to take a very common example with anger, if we have a tendency to react to certain people or in certain situations, to be aware of the anger as it's arising is a certain kind of freedom from these tendencies. They're still there, sort of in the body, and we can actually, that's one way of becoming aware of the anger, is through physiological changes, sweaty palms, heart racing, the throat closing, and so it's harder to speak, and other common signs of anger arising. If we notice these things as they're happening, then with this awareness, we have the chance to choose between just letting it rip or not, of finding a different way than venting our anger. That's just one of many kinds of emotional reactions we can have in our daily lives. So that anger habit force, that reactive tendency, is a samskara. And it arises from previous causes. For example, getting angry in the past over and over and over and over and over, thousands of times. And angry doesn't just mean enraged. It means getting irritated, annoyed, testy, and any other further form of that anger. Then there's this momentum that can be so hard to break, even after enlightenment. And the masters, the greatest of the Chinese masters and the Japanese too, warned about the power of these habit forces even after awakening. It's very sobering. We'd like to think that if we work really hard long enough, then we'll have this explosive enlightenment experience, and we will be free of all of these tendencies. But it's not so. It's not so. They lurk there. My favorite way to describe it, drawing from another Chinese teacher from ages past, who said, referring to this problem even after enlightenment of our habit forces, he said, the wind ceases, but the waves still surge. So anyone who thinks that we can just get in and get out of this practice, we can just get in. Roshi Kapo used to admit that when he went to Japan, he just wanted to grab Kensho and run. It doesn't work that way. Even with an awakening experience, then there's the mopping up operation, and that can take not just years, but lifetimes of working on it. But again, lest anyone be disheartened about this, it gets better and better. We get more acute about noticing the arising of these forces in us, and are able to step back and not give way to these tendencies. And when each time we refrain from, let's go back to anger, each time we refrain from reacting with anger, that anger force, that particular samskara, is weakened. And so incrementally, little by little, we start to deconstruct these samskaras, and then that itself makes it easier. So it's kind of a reversal of the process that people who aren't practicing have to face. Without practice of some kind, I'm not speaking only of Zen or Buddhism, but I would say without a practice like meditation, we don't have the awareness to catch ourselves, to notice when these things arise in us. And let's not dwell on anger too much. Let's think of depression. Although there, I've heard from many sources that they're very much related. Freud. Freud said that that depression is anger suppressed or repressed. So very often underneath depression there is anger, unacknowledged, unresolved anger. I would urge people who have problems with depression to at least consider that. I don't know. I would never make a statement that that's always the case, but I think it often is the case, and that by getting underneath and looking at possible unconscious anger, that this can go a long way to ameliorating the problem of depression. There's a book that I turn to now and then. It's not a new book at all. Published in 1989, called The Art of Happiness, Teachings of Buddhist Psychology by Mirko Friba. I'm probably mispronouncing it. He's a Czechoslovakian psychotherapist based in Switzerland, or at least he was when this book was written. And by the way, everything I've been talking about, this is all what you could call Buddhist psychology. It's part of the whole division of Buddhist texts called the Abhidharma, which is Buddhist philosophy and psychology. And he has some interesting ways of seeing this matter of the samskaras. First, he distinguishes between two chains of effects that can spring from the skanda of feeling or experience. That's, by the way, you remember, that's the second of the five skandas. The samskaras is the fourth. Feeling or sensation is the second, and he draws this parallel course where when we have a feeling, let's say a feeling of rejection, a feeling of hunger, any kind of feeling or sensation, from that feeling can come craving, which is the way that ends up in painful experience. Craving, which leads to attachment, which leads to what they call becoming. The other way to go through feeling or sensation is not craving, but aspiration, the aspiration to get free of it. And from that comes a resolution. We do this at New Year's Eve, resolutions, and from that comes effort. So it's from the feeling, the original feeling or experience, comes the resolve, or the will directed toward a specific goal, let's say to save all sentient beings, and from that, effort. Or from the experience comes clutching or grasping at things to in a neurotic way, and from that comes attachment, comes more suffering. So there are two ways to go, and practice is what enables us to more often go the route of the wholesome way toward liberation, again through awareness. It's all about awareness. And I would go so far as to say, not just in Zen, but in any spiritual tradition, of any culture, of any time in history, it's all about awareness. In fact, that's one way that we can understand the word Buddha. Usually the word Buddha is translated as enlightenment or the enlightened one. But it certainly doesn't mean just this man who lived in India. The word Buddha also can be understood as enlightened awareness. And this awareness is the birthright of all of us. All of us have this awareness. When we are aware, this is a kind of actualizing, okay, of functioning of our enlightened nature, our true nature. A more ordinary word like awareness is noticing. Some people relate to that more. Just noticing what's going on in the mind and the body. The mind-body, the body-mind. At all times, this requires being present. We can't be aware of what's going on in the mind-body unless we're present. And then this makes all the difference. Then we can start dismantling these tendencies called samskaras. So this is a way, to use his phrase, this Mirko Frivas phrase, this is a way of reshaping suffering-producing processes. And one way of doing that is withdrawing our attention from the spheres of suffering-producing thoughts. It's kind of a cumbersome way of saying it, but basically this is what everyone's doing when they're doing Zazen. You notice that your attention has been drawn into thoughts, and then the act of withdrawing the attention, or better yet, redirecting the attention back away from thoughts, and you could say ultimately that all thoughts are suffering producing, but swinging the attention, this beam of attention, back to that which is beyond thoughts, no thought. That is how we reshape these processes that cause us suffering, or we can neutralize those. And then he quotes the Buddha as follows: as a man with very sharp sight who no longer wishes to see pictures that are in his field of vision either closes his eyes or looks away, in the same way the monk, when he looks into the perilous consequences of unwholesome thoughts, and nevertheless these unwholesome thoughts arise, should withdraw his attention from these thoughts. Then the unwholesome thoughts fade away and dissolve. With their fading away, his consciousness becomes firm in itself, settles, becomes unified and concentrated. So, as we said in the workshop yesterday, it's all a matter of to what we are directing this beam of attention. To quote this Spanish philosopher, José Ortega y Gasset, tell me to what you pay attention, and I'll tell you who you are. That's it. That's it. That, you could say, is a way of going right to the crux of Zen practice, is having the freedom and the will to direct our attention to that which is beyond thought, which means the breath, for example, or the koan that we're working on. Just handling that flashlight, that beam of attention, that's largely what it comes down to. Having the will or the intention or the volition to swing the attention back to the breath, let's say. And that's really the sort of the engine of karma. And the Buddha famously said, "It is mental volition, O monks, that I call karma. Having willed, one acts through body, speech, or mind." And so practice, of course, takes effort. It takes will. We have to be clear about our intention of what it is we're doing or what it is we want, just to really put it in simple terms. What do we want? Do we want, when we're sitting, do we want to just let the mind drift into fantasies and memories and plans for the future? Well, if we do that, then we're doing nothing to lighten our karma. We certainly aren't doing anything to free ourselves of these samskaras, these tendencies. Now let's go to the Middle East and Eastern Europe. Let's start with the Middle East. Can you see the force of these habit forces, these tendencies, these samskaras that are operating, that have been operating for centuries and centuries? I'm not going to get into any specifics because truthfully, I don't. It's beyond me. It's beyond me what's going on there. It's a conflict. It's antagonisms that have lasted so long that they have built up such force, such momentum. This is what is so discouraging about this particular conflict between Jews and Arabs, Israelis and Palestinians. It's been going on for so long, and the hatred has just built and built and just goes on running full steam, and then it flares up every once in a while into open war, and then it goes under for a while. But there it is. One aspect of it is this, mentioned that the root of suffering is ignorance of the true nature of things, that we are not separate. Well, one aspect of that is this group identification, identifying with an ethnic group, a religion, a race. We're called upon in spiritual practice to do nothing less than see through these divisions, to see that, yes, there are differences, of course, in all these ways, but that beyond these differences, there is a sameness. That's a tall order. It becomes all the harder the longer the conflict has gone on, the more sharply embedded these notions of us and them, self and other. The longer that's gone on, the harder it is to break that up, to see through it.